fearlessly was not able to explain, except to convey that they had little to do with curiosity or a need for resources. It seemed to be simply what grubs did, an imperative which had been hardwired into them in evolutionary antiquity. They had no overwhelming interest in technology or science for their own sakes, seeming to get by on techniques they had acquired so long ago in racial memory terms that the underlying principles had been forgotten. Predictably, they had not fared well when their outlying colonies had encountered the grub-eating machines. The grub-eaters began to make slow incursions into grub space, pressuring the aliens to modify behavior patterns that had been locked rigid for tens of millions of years. To survive, the grubs first had to grasp that they were being persecuted. Even that took a million years to sink in. Then, with glacial slowness, they began, if not to fight back, then at the very least to develop survival strategies. They abandoned their surface colonies and evacuated themselves entirely into interstellar space, the better to hide from the grub-eaters. They constructed void warrens as large as small planets. By and by they encountered the harried remnants of other species, who were also being persecuted by the eaters, though they had a different name for them. The grubs appropriated technologies as it suited their needs, usually without bothering to understand them. Control of gravity and inertia had come from a symbiotic race called the Nest Builders. A form of instantaneous communication had been bequeathed by a culture who called themselves the Jumper Clowns. The grubs had been sternly admonished when they had asked if the same principles might be extended to instantaneous travel. To the Jumper Clowns there was a fine, blasphemous line between faster-than-light signaling and travel. The one was acceptable within tightly specified parameters of usage. The other was an unspeakable perversion. A concept so distasteful that it caused refined Jumper Clowns to shrivel up and die in revulsion. Only the most uncouth of young species failed to grasp this. But for all the technologies that the grubs and their loose allies held, it was never enough to beat the machines. They were always swifter, always stronger. Now and then there were organic victories, but the general drift of things was always such that the grub-eaters would win. Sky was thinking about that when Gomez called him again. The urgency in his voice was obvious, despite the weakness of the signal.
"Sky, bad news. The two shuttles have launched a pair of drones. They might be just cameras, but my guess is they'll have anti-collision warheads on them. They're on high-G trajectories, and they'll reach us in about 15 minutes.
"They wouldn't do it," Norquinko said. "They wouldn't attack us without first finding out what's going on here. They'd run the risk of destroying a whole flotilla ship, which has, survivors and supplies on it, just like we thought it would have."
"No," Sky said. "They'd do it, if only to stop us getting hold of whatever they think's on her."
"I don't believe it."
"Why not? It's exactly what I'd do." He told Gomez to sit tight and killed the link. The fraction of a day he had imagined they would have to themselves had now compressed down to less than a quarter of an hour. It was probably not enough time to make it back to the shuttle and get away, even if there had been no obstructions to cut through. But there was still time to do something. Time, in fact, to hear the rest of what traveling fearlessly had to say. It might make all the difference. Trying not to think of the minutes ticking away and the missiles hairing closer, he told the grub to continue his story. The grub was happy to oblige.
"Gideon," the man in the chair said, after he had curtailed the telling of his story with an abrupt sequence of commands.
"We had arrived in a natural cavern.